It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh boy. Hello. Welcome, one and all. It is March 30th, 2022. That's right, March 30th, 2022, one more day of the month to go, and it is 1903 UTC. Sorry about the little bit of delay there, but hey, such is life. Things get busy. I call it old man falling asleep. I ate a sandwich for lunch, and then I was watching TV, you know, just taking a break. And I just nodded right off, and I missed a meeting, and it just kind of has thrown my day into a little bit of a mix-up, but such is life. I also want to go ahead here and just mention, because I forgot to yesterday, or I didn't do it in the right time, but hello, shout out to Com, DJ Tin from Berlin is in the house, along with W. Visser, hello, and X1. Thank you so much. If you're new and you're listening, well, all right. And if you'd like to join and chat during the show, you can do that while we're doing it live. All you need to do is SSH over to sdf.org. And once you're there, go ahead and launch Calm. If you don't have an account yet, all you need to do is SSH over as new, N-E-W, at sdf.org. And you'll be able to sign up for an account. Once you sign up for an account, then you SSH over, you launch COM, that's C-O-M, you press enter, you press G for go to, and then type Anon Radio, all lowercase, all one word, and then that will connect you to the Anon Radio room, where you get to hang out with cool people like Stug and Claudio M and Ratsu and X1 and Jazzmaz, if he's listening, and all sorts of cool people. So definitely go ahead and do that. And so there you go. Yeah, if you are new and you didn't know, that's how you can interact with Calm and get moving. But let's go ahead and get started the way we pretty much always start, and that, my friends, is with
world news.
Flying sonotone. Five killed by Palestinian gunmen in latest deadly attack in Israel. Five people have been shot dead by a Palestinian gunman in a suburb of the Israeli city of Tel Aviv in the third deadly attack of its kind in a week. It happened on Tuesday evening in B'nai Brak, one of the country's most populous ultra-Orthodox Jewish areas. I think they mean it's like a Jewish extremist area? I don't know. Ultra-Orthodox sounds very suspicious to me. You never know. I don't know. Anybody, all the extreme religions really weird me out. The gunman was shot dead by police, a paramedic at the scene said. Israeli security forces were on high alert after attacks by Israel Arabs last Tuesday and Sunday, which left six people dead. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett said the country was currently dealing with a new wave of terrorism. Footage from the scene in B'nai Brak showed the attacker dressed in black firing an M16 assault rifle on residential streets. Israeli media reported that he first shot dead two Ukrainian men who were sitting outside a grocery shop. He also opened fire at a passing car, killing a man who was driving it. He then shot dead a fourth man before being confronted by two police. One of the officers was fatally wounded during the exchange, while the second shot and killed the attacker. Magen David Adam, ambulance service paramedic, Menachem Englander, said he came face-to-face with the gunman but survived because the rifle jammed. So... The victims. Ukrainian embassy confirmed that two Ukrainian citizens were killed. The attacker was named. He's a 27-year-old Palestinian man from the village of Yabad in the north of the occupied West Bank. He'd previously worked in the area and been jailed in Israel for security-related offenses. Three of his relatives were reportedly among five Palestinians detained for questioning by Israeli forces in the West Bank on Wednesday as investigators sought to find out if he had accomplices. Every few years, the state of Israel deals with a wave of terrorism, Mr. Bennett said in a video statement on Tuesday night. After a period of quiet, there is a violent eruption by those who want to destroy us, those who want to... I'm not going to read the whole quote. I mean, they're They're brutally oppressing and exterminating these people. The prime minister said Israel's security forces had to adapt to the telltale signs of lone individuals, sometimes without organizational affiliation, and to be in control on the ground in order to thwart terrorism even before it happens. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken condemned the attack. Violence is unacceptable, he said. Israelis, like all people around the world, should be able to live in peace and without fear. Yeah. So that's pretty much all the news that's in that story. Just a bunch more mutual DSing. What else is going on? Well, you know the Red Cross? Yeah, it's an international aid organization, and it's known for not being that great at converting the dollars you give it to good on the ground, but they are still an organization that's trying. Yeah, W. Visser has made a good point. U.S. violence is unacceptable, LOL. The United States' primary export, I would say, is violence. We want a monopoly on violence. That might be why the U.S. is so mad. We want a monopoly on violence. Well, anyway, the International Committee of the Red Cross has condemned what it calls a widespread and systemic campaign of misinformation about its work in Ukraine. These are strong words from the famously neutral organization and reflect deep concern that its humanitarian operations worldwide could be undermined by what appears to be a coordinated strategy designed to destroy trust. It is a targeted, deliberate campaign discrediting the ICRC and its work. It's unacceptable, said the organization's Director General, Robert Mardini. For at least 2 weeks, across multiple social media platforms, criticisms and false accusations against the ICRC have been appearing in Ukrainian and Russian. One of the most damaging is the claim that the organization has supported forced evacuations of Ukrainian citizens across the border into Russia. Mr. Mardini said this was absolutely not correct. The rules of war say that civilians must be protected everywhere where this conflict is happening, and when they choose to leave because the situation is untenable, it should be of their own free will. Another focus of criticism has been the ICRC president's visit to Moscow, where he was pictured shaking hands with the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. For some in Ukraine, the optics may not be ideal, but Mr. Maher was in Kyiv before he was in Moscow, and he shook hands there too. Basically, what we kind of come down to is, here it is. The task now will be to ensure that the trust in the ICRC's work is not damaged further. It remains unclear who's behind the campaign of misinformation, but the ICRC is convinced it's targeted and deliberate. This week, the official office of the Ukrainian Red Cross was hit by a Molotov cocktail. The ICRC and its local Red Cross and Red Crescent partners are not armed, and they never travel with armed guards. Their protection, Robert Mardini says, is the Red Cross. He points to what the ICRC can do when trust is there, prisoner exchanges in Yemen, the release of kidnapped Nigerian schoolgirls, etc. We need to ensure we are perceived as neutral and impartial. This neutrality, international humanitarian law, when it works, it does save lives. Welcome, Stug. Hello, hello. So, yeah, the ICRC, for all its faults, is trying to be neutral, a neutral organization. So, that's going on. Now, this is kind of weird. I thought it was interesting, so I wanted to bring it up because it's news to me.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
Yeah. We'll play a song here in just a minute. Check this out. In Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe's begun repossessing idle land from black farmers who benefited from controversial land reforms 2 decades ago. Agricultural Minister Anxious... Well, that's an interesting name. Agricultural Minister Anxious Masuka said Wednesday. People whose farmland is lying unused and those who own multiple farms will lose land, he said. The land will be given to aspiring farmers from a waiting list left from earlier rounds of land reform, he said. Zimbabwe has a finite geographic space. We have allocated 99% of the land, and the land that I'm currently allocating to those on the waiting list is land that I'm taking from blacks allocating to blacks. Government will not repossess productive farms, he said. We will leave a family with a farm. Speaking at the opening of annual tobacco auctions, Masuka said some repossessions had already occurred, but didn't give details. Former President Robert Mugabe launched land reforms in 2000, forcibly removing white farmers and giving their land to blacks. The scheme was supposed to redress legacies of British colonialism, but in practice, many of Mugabe's close allies ended up with multiple farms. Hey, Leon G., welcome, welcome. But many new farmers had little knowledge, training, or support, and vast swaths of land became derelict. Once renowned as a breadbasket, Zimbabwe now suffers from chronic food shortages, while 250,000 farmers are on the waiting list for land. Masuka's deputy told AFP that government had also allowed former white commercial farmers to return to some farms through joint ventures. "We don't have a set criterion as government," he said. "What we want is fairness for everyone." According to the Famine Early Warning Systems Network, some 10 million of Zimbabwe's nearly 15 million people risk hunger by September after a poor rainy season. The country has long depended on donors for basic food supplies. So I thought this was a neat, it was really neat because I think giving out land, the government giving out land for a purpose, and then if it's not being used for that purpose, being able to take it back is pretty cool. Anyway, I thought that was kind of neat. It's an interesting approach. Well, one more story, then we'll play a song. China, panic buying in divided Shanghai under lockdown. Shanghai's COVID lockdown has left thousands scrambling to stock up on supplies, while others quarantine in their offices to keep businesses running. After weeks of isolated compound lockdowns, the city of 25 million has been split in two. Earlier this week, those living in Shanghai's eastern half were told to stay home, with the western half due to interlockdown on Friday. Then, the move comes as the city battles a surge in Omicron cases. They've reported around 20,000 COVID-19 infections since March 1st, registering more cases in 4 weeks than in the previous 2 years of the pandemic. China's zero COVID strategy has been increasingly challenged by the highly infectious Omicron variant. Officials in China's cosmopolitan financial capital had earlier attempted to keep the city running by limiting lockdowns to select neighborhoods or buildings. But on Sunday, authorities announced a mass lockdown that saw city Beijing split along the Hongpu River. Residents living in the Pudong area on the river's eastern bank were told to stay at home for 4 days starting on Monday. Puxi on the western bank will enter lockdown on Friday. Mass testing is also being carried out to screen all of Shanghai's residents for the virus. So, that's pretty wild, right? Let's see, X1's got a comment. Vote for me and I'll give you a nice piece of land. Of course, you can only vote. Of course, you only vote for me because it's justice. Oh, man. So, I've got a song for you. This artist I like a lot, Meg Myers, has a new song out, and so she's been promoting a lot of the hell out of it. And it made me listen to her first record that I really liked, called Sorry. And this is a song off of that record. It's called Lemon Eyes. It's kind of poppy. So, here we go.
Hush now, baby, there's no need to cry. Let me wipe away those lemon eyes. All your worries, such a waste of time. You can't even see how much you're mine. You're so bitter, 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 yellow. Settle, settle, cut to settle. Die. Okay, listen, listen, you listen, yellow. It's a killer, a killer, a killer, just say.
Hold on, baby, careful. Radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.
Oh, that's right. You're listening to a non-radio powered by SDF. And SDF, well, my friends, that's powered by you. So thank you so much for listening and being here. And however you consume or use SDF, thanks for being here. Reminder, on Friday nights at, or I guess it's technically on Saturday mornings at 0300 is the Synth Battle Royale. Please tune in or listen on the archive. I've been having sleep trouble, so I keep either falling asleep or being crazy when that show's airing. So the archive is pretty good to check out. It's fun. So definitely do that. And at 1930 UTC, every damn day, as Tobe likes to say, is the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. Fun show that's about 30 minutes long. And hopefully, the headmaster, or what is it, the chairman of the committee, is in today. There's been a lot of health stuff running around, and our condolences go out to Tin, DJ Tin from Berlin, who is I guess walking right now because his car got stolen. That sucks. All right. Well, let's get back into it. There's plenty more news that we can all use. So let's get going. Sorry, I've got a bunch of chats that I was looking at. First, Germany and Austria take steps towards gas rationing. Germany and Austria have triggered emergency plans over possible gas supply distribution amid a payment standoff with Russia. Russia had demanded unfriendly countries pay for its gas in rubles from the 31st of March, but the EU, which mainly pays in euros, rejected the idea. Moscow later appeared to soften its stance, saying on Wednesday ruble payments would be introduced gradually. But Germany and Austria have taken the first steps towards gas rationing. Germany urged customers and companies to reduce consumption in anticipation of possible shortages, while Austria said it was tightening its monitoring of the gas market. Germany gets about half its gas and a third of its oil from Russia and is warned that it could face a recession if supplies suddenly stopped. Neighboring Austria relies on Russia much more for gas, with the country getting about 80% from the country, and Austrian Chancellor Karl Nehammer's office said measures such as gas rationing would only come into play in an immediate crisis. Under an existing gas emergency plan, the early warning phase, which both Germany and Austria have begun, is the first of three steps designed to prepare the country for a potential gas shortage. In its final stage, the governments would bring in gas rationing. German economy minister Robert Habeck said the country's gas supplies were safeguarded for the time being, but said it was an increasingly precautionary measure in case of escalation by Russia. The head of German network regulator Bundesnetzagentur, Klaus Müller, said the aim of the early warnings was to avoid a deterioration of supply. He urged consumers and industry to prepare for all scenarios. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Russia would not demand payments in rubles from Thursday. Payments and delivery is a time-consuming process from a technological point of view. This is a more prolonged process, he said. The U.S. has been imposing sanctions on Russia in response to its invasion of Ukraine. Hold on, I'll put... Tin said... Tim tried to understand what I said. Hey! Yeah. I'm guessing it's regulator gas person or something. The West has been imposing sanctions. Analysts say the move will support the country's currency, which fell sharply after the invasion, but has begun to recover. Europe, which in total imports about 40% of its gas from Russia and pays mostly in euros, says Russia's state-controlled gas giant Gazprom cannot redraw contracts. But Vyacheslav Volodin, the speaker of the lower house of the Russian parliament, said on Wednesday, European politicians need to stop the talk, stop trying to find some justification about why they cannot pay in rubles. If you want gas, find rubles. The Kremlin also said Russia could start demanding payment in rubles for other commodities, such as fertilizer, grain, metals, and timbers. Ah, and TIN has translated Federal Network Agency, is what that, what the Bundesnetzagentur means. The Kremlin also said it could start demanding payment in rubles for other commodities, like fertilizer, grain, metals, and timber. So, what else rest of Europe has got going on? Well, France gets about 20% of its gas from Russia. Bulgaria gets 90% of its gas via imports from Gazprom. Excuse me, I'm going to cough. Sorry about that. I forgot my water in the other room. Bulgaria gets 90% of its gas from Gazprom. Poland gets 50% of its gas from Russia, but says it has no plans to limit gas use. Greece is at 40%. Italy is 40%. The Netherlands gets 15 to 20% from Russia. And Britain gets around 3% of gas from Russia and says it has a range of sources to ensure supply. I'm just blown away that I did not realize that Russia was exporting so much natural gas to Europe. Jeez Louise, you guys. Anyway, I was just surprised. S&P Global Energy Analyst Laurent Rosaka said Russia and the EU were involved in a game of chicken over who would back down first. The most likely next step for the EU and Gazprom was to seek compromise by redrawing contracts, as both sides have interest in resolving the standoff. Russia currently gets 400 million euros per day from gas sales to the EU, and it has no way of rerouting this supply to other markets. However, Mr. Rusecka said, there's a small chance the brinkmanship leads very quickly towards a cutoff. This would force Germany to run more coal plants, import as much liquefied natural gas as possible, and in the longer term, build more renewable energy production. So, we'll see what happens, but it's looking rough. All right, we're going to run through the headlines now as we're running low on time. Climate change. Wind and solar reach milestone as demand surges. Wind and solar generated 10% of the global electricity for the first time in 2021, a new analysis shows. 50 countries get more than a tenth of their power from wind and solar, according to research from Ember, a climate energy think tank. So that's good news for the environment. Joe Biden signs landmark law making lynching a hate crime. The first federal legislation making lynching a hate crime, addressing a history of racist killings in the United States, became a law on Tuesday. The bill passed by the Senate this month is named for Emmett Till, the 14-year-old black boy who was brutally murdered in Mississippi in 1955. Joe Biden signed the bill, surrounded by Kamala Harris, members of Congress, and two top justice officials. He was also joined by a descendant of Ida B. Wells, a black journalist who reported on lynchings, and the Reverend Will Parker, a cousin of Till. And, oh man, those are some disturbing photos, and just really tragic, because it happened in the 50s. It was 1955. Anyway, the United States still has a lot of racism and painful history to try and reconcile one day. Senegal ends Egypt's dream for Qatar 2022 World Cup. So that's a football update for you. And fans are celebrating in Cameroon and Morocco over their cup qualification for the FIFA World Cup in 2022. Okay, gas, Ukraine. Judges approved Activision's Blizzard's $18 million settlement for sexual harassment suit. A judge has approved an $18 million settlement between Activision, Blizzard, and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, bringing one of several discrimination lawsuits against the gaming company to a close. Hey, Zeptar was here. Hello, if you're out there. Hope you're well. And there's a few other stories here. It's just hard to jump through them when we're running low. Joshua Tree climber fell to her death after attaching safety rope to weak nylon left behind by others, which is a bad, sad story. The second climber who died in Joshua Tree National Park last weekend fell to her death after she tied her safety rope to a weak nylon webbing while rock climbing, witnesses present at the spot have said. Tina Lynn Fiore died following an 80-foot fall around 4 p.m. on Saturday. Matt Himmelston, who accompanied the woman and another person to rock climb on Saturday, said failed equipment led to her death. She tied her safety rope to a nylon webbing left behind by someone else on the route previously. The inadequate and worn out nylon led to her death. So that sucks. Sucks to die from something like that. Let's see. Andrew Giuliani has been slammed for grotesque anti-trans remarks about changing infant daughter's diaper. She was born a woman and she's going to stay a woman. It's that simple, he says. Which, of course, is horribly offensive and why he's getting a bunch of shit. And a report has found that police continue killing black people at the same rate as they've always have. No progress since George Floyd. U.S. police killing 3 people per day. As Joe Biden pushes to fund the police, data from mapping police violence shows high rates of death at the hands of law enforcement persist. So that's a nice, pleasant thought to end in the news and start the Dubious Goals Committee. police have killed roughly 1,100 people each year since 2013. And my screen went blank. Did they find me? No. In 2021, officers killed 1,136 people. The organization Mapping Police Violence tracks deaths recorded by police, governments, and the media.